She rose and turned to go back to him, but then she saw me in the doorway. I tried to melt away into the shadows, for I was embarrassed at having spied upon so intimate a moment. However, her face lit with joy, and before I could escape, she ran to me and seized my hands. "Oh, Taita, I'm so glad that you are here, you of all people. It's so fitting, it makes it all so perfect." She led me forward into the sanctum, and Thanos rose to his feet and came smiling to take my other hand. "Thank you for coming. I know we can always count upon you." I wished that my motives had been as pure as they believed them to be, so I hid my guilty heart from them with a loving smile. "Kneel here," Lostris ordered me, "here where you can hear every word we say to each other. You will bear witness for us before Happy and all the gods of Egypt." She pressed me to my knees, and then she and Thanos resumed their places in front of the goddess and took each other's hands, looking full into each other's eyes. Lostris spoke first. "You are my son," she whispered. "My day is dark without you." "You are the Nile of my heart," Thanos told her quietly. "The waters of your love feed my soul." "You are my man, through this world and all the worlds to come."
"You are my woman, and I pledge you my love. I swear it to you on the breath and the blood of Horus,"
Thanos said clearly and openly, so that his voice echoed through the stone halls. "I take up your pledge and return it to you 100-fold, Lostris cried. "No one can ever come between us, nothing can ever part us. We are one, forever." She offered her face to his, and he kissed her deeply and lingeringly. As far as I was aware, it was the first kiss that the couple had ever exchanged. I felt that I was privileged to have witnessed such an intimate moment. As they embraced, a sudden chill wind off the lagoon swirled through the dimly lit halls of the temple and fluttered the torch flames, so that for an instant the faces of the two lovers blurred before my eyes, and the image of the goddess seemed to stir and quiver. The wind passed as swiftly as it had come, but the whisper of it around the great stone pillars was like the distant sardonic laughter of the gods, and I shuddered with superstitious awe. It is always dangerous to pique the gods with extravagant demands, and Lostris had just asked for the impossible. This was the moment that for years I had known was coming, and which I had dreaded more bitterly than the day of my own death. The pledge that Thanos and Lostris had made to each other could never endure. No matter how deeply they meant it, it could never be. I felt my own heart tearing within me, as at last they broke the kiss and both turned back to me. "Why so sad, Taita?" Lostris demanded, her own face flooded with joy. "Rejoice with me, for this is the happiest day of my life." I forced my lips to smile, but I could find no word of comfort or of felicitation for these two, the ones I loved best in all the world. I remained upon my knees with that fixed, idiotic smile on my lips, and desolation in my soul. Now Thanos lifted me to my feet and embraced me. "You will speak to Lord Intef on my behalf, won't you?" he demanded, as he hugged me. "Oh, yes, Taita," Lostris joined her plea to his. "My father will listen to you. You are the only one who can do it for us. You won't fail us, will you, Taita? You have never let me down, never once in all my life. You will do it for me, won't you?" What could I say to them? I could not be so cruel as to tell them the blunt truth. I could not find the words to blight this fresh and tender love. They were waiting for me to speak, to express my joy for them, and to promise them my help and support, but I was struck dumb. My mouth was as dry as if I had bitten into an unripe pomegranate. "Taita, what is it?" I watched the joy wither upon my mistress's beloved countenance. "Why do you not rejoice for us?" "You know that I love you both, but..." I could not continue. But what, Taita?" Lostris demanded. "Why do you give me buts and a long face on this happiest of all possible days?" She was becoming angry. Her jaw was setting. But at the same time there were tears gathering deep in her eyes. "Don't you want to help us? Is this the real value of all the promises you have made to me over the years?" She came to me and thrust her face close to mine in challenge. "Mistress, please don't talk like that. I do not deserve that treatment. No, listen to me. I placed my fingers on her lips to forestall another outburst. It is not me. It is your father, my Lord Intef.
Exactly. Impatiently, Lostris plucked my hand away from her mouth. My father. You will go to him and speak to him the way you always do, and it will be all right.
Lostris, I began. And it was a sign of my distress that I used her name in this familiar fashion. You are no longer a child. You must not delude yourself with childish fantasies. That you know that your father will never agree. She would not listen to me. She did not want to hear the truth that I would speak. So she rushed in with words to drown out mine. I know that Tanos has no fortune, yes, but he has a marvellous future ahead of him. One day he will command all the armies of Egypt. One day he will fight the battles which will reunite the two kingdoms, and I will be at his side. Mistress, please hear me out. It is not only the lack of Tanos' fortune, it is more, much more. His bloodline and his breeding, then, is that what troubles you? You know full well that his family is as noble as ours. Pianchi, Lord Harab, was my own father's equal and his dearest friend. She had closed her ears to me. She did not realize the depth of the tragedy on which we were embarking. Neither she nor Tanos did, but then I was probably the only person in the kingdom who understood it fully. I had protected her from the truth all these years, and of course I had never been able to tell Tanos either. How could I explain it to her now? How could I reveal to her the depths of the hatred that her father bore towards the young man she loved? It was a hatred born out of guilt and envy, and yet all the more implacable for these reasons. However, my Lord Intef was a crafty and devious man. He was able to conceal his feelings from those around him. He was able to dissemble his hatred and his spite, and to kiss the one he would destroy and heap rich gifts and lulling flattery upon him. He had the patience of the crocodile buried in the mud at the drinking place on the river, waiting for the unsuspecting gazelle. He would wait years, even a decade. But when the opportunity arose, he was as swift as that reptile to strike and drag his prey under. Lostris was blithely unaware of the depths of her father's rancor. She even believed that he had loved Pianchi, Lord Harab, as Tanos' father had loved him. But then how could she know the truth of it, for I had always shielded her from it? In her sweet innocence, Lostris believed that the only objections that her father would have to her lover were those of fortune and family. You know it is true, Taita. Tanos is my equal in the lists of the nobility. It is written in the temple records for all to see. How can my father deny it? How can you deny it? It is not for me to deny or to accede, mistress. Then you will go to my father for us, won't you, dear Taita? Say you will. Please say you will. I could only bow my head in acquiescence and to hide the hopeless expression in my eyes. The fleet was heavily laden on the return to Karnak. The galleys were low in the water under their cargoes of raw hides and salted meat. Thus our progress against the Nile's current was slower than on our outward journey, but still too swift for my heavy heart and mounting dread. The lovers were gay and euphoric, with their newly declared love and their trust in me to remove the obstacles from their path. I could not bring myself to deny them this day of happiness, for I knew that it would be one of the very last that they would share. I think that if I could have found the words or summoned the courage, I would have urged them, there and then, to seek the consummation of their love that I had so opposed the night before. There would never be another chance for them. Not after I had alerted my Lord Intef with my foredoomed attempt at matchmaking. Once he knew what they were about, he would come between them and thrust them apart forever. So, instead, I laughed and smiled as gaily as they did, and tried to hide my fears from them. They were so blinded by love that I succeeded, whereas at any other time my mistress would have seen through me immediately. She knows me almost as well as I know her. We sat together in the prow, the three of us, and we discussed the reenactment of the Passion of Osiris that would be the highlight of the festival. My Lord Intef had made me the impresario of the pageant, and I had cast both Lostris and Tanos in leading roles. The festival is held every second year at the rising of the full moon of Osiris. There was a time when it was an annual event. However, the expense and disruption of royal life caused by having to remove the court from Elephantine to Thebes was so great that Pharaoh decreed a greater interval between the festivals. He was always a prudent man with his gold, was our Pharaoh. The plans for the pageant provided me with a fine distraction from the looming confrontation with my lord Intef, and so now I rehearsed the two lovers in their lines. Lostris was to play Isis, the wife of Osiris, while Tanos was to take on the major role of Horus. They were both vastly amused at the idea of Tanos playing Lostris's son, and I had to explain that the gods were ageless, and it was quite possible that a goddess could appear younger than her offspring. I had written a new script for the pageant to replace the one that had remained unchanged for almost 1,000 years. The language of the ancient one was archaic and unsuitable for a modern audience. Pharaoh would be the guest of honour when the pageant was performed in the Temple of Osiris on the final night of the festival, so I was particularly anxious that it should be a success. I had already encountered opposition to my new version of the Passion from the more conservative nobles and priests. Only my lord Intef's intervention had prevailed against their objections. My lord is not a deeply religious man and would not normally have interested himself in theological arguments. However, I had included a few lines that was designed to amuse and flatter him. I read them to him out of context, and then tactfully pointed out to him that the chief opposition to my version came from the high priest of Osiris, a prissy old man who had once frustrated my lord Intef's interest in a comely young acolyte. This was a trespass for which my lord had never forgiven the high priest. Thus it was that my version would be performed for the first time. It was essential that the actors bring out the full glory of my poetry, or it might well be the last time it would be heard. Both Tanos and Lostris possessed marvellous speaking voices, and they were determined to reward me for my promise to help them. They gave me of their best, and thus the rehearsal was so absorbing, their recitation so startling, that for a while I could forget myself. Then I was brought back from the passion of the gods to my own mundane preoccupations by a cry from the lookout. The fleet was sweeping around the last bend in the river, and there lay the twin cities of Luxor and Karnak, that between them made up greater Thebes, strung out along the bank before us and sparkling like a necklace of pearls in the stark Egyptian sunlight. Our fantastic interlude had ended, and we must face reality once again. My spirits tumbled as I scrambled to my feet. Tanos, you must transfer Lostris and myself to the galley of Kratos before we come any closer to the city. My lord's minions will be watching us from the land. They must not see us in your company. A little late, is it not? Tanos smiled at me. You should have thought of that some days ago. My father will learn about us soon enough, Lostris endorsed his objection. It might make your task easier if we forewarn him of our intentions. If you know better than I, then you must do it your way, and I will take no further part in this crazy business of yours. I put on my most stiff and offended air, and they relented immediately. Tanos signalled Kratos's galley alongside, and the lovers had only a few moments for their farewells. They dared not embrace before the eyes of the half the fleet, but the glances and the loving words they exchanged were almost as fulfilling. From the stern tower of Kratos's ship, we waved to the breath of Horus as she turned from us, and with her paddles flashing like the wings of a dragonfly, she bore away to her moorings in front of the city of Luxor, while we continued on upriver towards the palace of the Grand Vizier. Immediately we docked at the palace wharf, I made inquiry as to the whereabouts of my master, and was relieved to learn that he had crossed the river to undertake a last-minute inspection of Pharaoh's tomb and funerary temple on the west bank. The king's temple and tomb had been under construction for the past 12 years, ever since the first day that he had donned the double white and red crown of the two kingdoms. It was nearing completion at last, and the king would be anxious to visit it as soon as the festival was over and he was free to do so. My lord Intef was anxious that the king should not be disappointed. One of my lord's many titles and honours was guardian of the royal tombs, and it was a serious responsibility. His absence afforded me a further day in which to prepare my case and plan my strategy. However, the solemn promise that the two lovers had extracted from me was to speak out for them at the first opportunity, and I knew that would be on the morrow, when my lord held his weekly assize. As soon as I had seen my mistress safely ensconced in the harem, I hurried to my own quarters in that wing of the palace which is reserved for the special companions of the Grand Vizier. My lord Intef's domestic arrangements were as devious as the rest of his existence. He had 8 wives, all of whom brought to his marriage either substantial dowry or influential political connections. However, only three of these women had ever borne him children. Apart from my Lady Lostries, there were two sons. As far as I was aware, and I was aware of everything that happened in the palace and most of what happened outside it, my lord had not visited the harem in the last 15 years. The getting of Lostries had been the last occasion that he had performed his matrimonial duties. His sexual tastes lay in other directions. The special companions of the Grand Vizier, who lived in our wing of the palace, were as pretty a collection of slave boys as you could find in the Upper Kingdom, where over the previous 100 years pederasty had replaced wildfowling and hunting as the favourite preoccupation of most of the nobility. This was merely another symptom of the ills that beset our lovely land.